Brothers and sisters, we're ready to begin our third class. Our speaker is Brother Tim Badger. The theme for Brother Badger's classes this week is The Way into the Holiest of All. Today's class is entitled, Messiah Shall Be Cut Off. Brother Tim.
Good morning, brothers and sisters. Lovely to be here on this Wednesday morning. Hopefully we're not fading away yet, even though it's midweek. Well, the six outcomes of the 70-week prophecy, let's just say them together. What's the first one? Without cheating. What was the first outcome? Finish the transgression. Number two. Make an end of sin or sin offerings. Number three, reconciliation for iniquity. Number four, ooh, getting a little rusty. Bring in everlasting righteousness. Good. And then number five, seal up the vision and the prophet. Number six, anoint most holy. Good. So what we're going to do today, God willing, brothers and sisters, is actually come right into the nub of the 70-week prophecy, and that is looking at the very final week. Everything in this prophecy really is coming to the culmination in the final 7 years of the 490 years. And of course, it's just worth stopping to think this morning. This is when the entire world history changed. This is why we're here. That final week of the 70-week prophecy, and right in the middle of that week, which Daniel was told about 500 years before it happened, that is the pivotal moment in the entire history of the world. And that's what we're talking about this morning. That's why we're here at this Bible school. That's what's made everything possible. So let's enter into the details, but we'll just have a quick recap. I made a picture of an egg timer just because the more I went along, I think that makes sense. The egg timer started at the beginning of the 7 weeks when the command to restore and build went out. There was 7 weeks we saw last class of streets being built and the wall, and that all happens in troublesome times. And then begins a period of seeming silence and very long waiting. The 62 weeks or 434 years. It's a long time. But obviously it's not nothing. It's in a precise timeline. So what we want to do is just focus on the last week. And what's really interesting about the 70-week prophecy is I believe the way Gabriel gives this prophecy in verse 26 and 27. He goes through the details of what happens in the final week and after the final week twice over in these two verses. So what we're saying, and I'm going to show you this morning, brothers and sisters, I think convincingly, is that the way Gabriel chose to reveal this to Daniel is he goes through the final week and what happens after it twice and brings out different details. And I think that's the simplest way to read and understand what Gabriel is trying to do to Daniel. So let's just, before we do that, I'm going to show you a simpler version of the 70-week prophecy, kind of like from a graphical point of view, rather than the busyness there. That maybe is helpful for later when you forget everything and you want to go back to the 70-week prophecy. But I've just made this to simplify it as simple as we can do it. And maybe this has a place just to help frame it for us. Verse 24 was the purpose. Then there's 7 weeks of rebuilding and restoring in tricky times. Then there's the period of waiting. And then we come to the final week. And during the final week, we are told, and we'll see this morning, just to be clear so we can follow this through, the Messiah is cut off, a covenant is strengthened, and Messiah is now referred to as Messiah the Prince. And then after that 1 week, we find language of utter destruction for the sanctuary and for the offerings and sacrifices. And you'll notice, therefore, during the 1 week, we believe that the 1 week and during it, this reference to the covenant and what's going on with the new covenant is described in the first part of verse 26 and the first part of 27. And then after the 70 weeks is done and dusted, the fallout or the wrap-up of the 70 weeks is described in the second half of verse 26 and the second half of verse 27. Let me show you the clearest way I can think of presenting it. And I think how Daniel would have seen it. If we read verse 26, this is what it says. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And then there seems to be a bit of a shift, and you read this. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Now I want you to notice that it seems like reading verse 26, the city and the sanctuary for which Daniel was desperately praying for restoration is destroyed. Again, you imagine if you're Daniel hearing verse 26 and your prayer in Daniel 9 that we started this week with was, God, please restore the city and the sanctuary. And this prophecy pretty much ends by saying to Daniel, it's going to be destroyed once again. Now that implies that it will be rebuilt, right? Can you see that? Daniel is sitting in a time when he receives this prophecy where the temple and the sanctuary is already destroyed. And Gabriel tells him it will be destroyed and like basically demolished once again. So it has to go through another period of rebuilding and another period of destruction. But I want you to notice that it seems like the way Gabriel puts this here is that it will only be destroyed after the Messiah is cut off. Can you see that? The city and the sanctuary will be destroyed after the Messiah is cut off. And that's precisely what happens in the history of the Mosaic system. Now, I believe verse 27 starts and talks about exactly the same two aspects, the purple and the red. I've just color-coded them here for the sake of ease. And here's what it says. So verse 27 picks up again where verse 26 started. Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. So it's talking about the length of that final week, the final 7 years. But in the middle of the final 7 years of the 490, in the middle of the week, he will bring an end to sacrifice and offering. Now I believe, and you might be able to already see, that exactly mirrors and parallels what the start of verse 26 is saying. Now, look what verse 27 goes on to say. And on the wing of abominations, can you see the shift, right? That's mirroring the second half of verse 26. Shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation, which is determined, is poured out on the desolate. Now, just a little footnote. Does anyone have an ESV for verse 27 and the last verse, or the last word of verse 27? What does it say instead of desolate?
Desolator.
The desolator. If you have a New King James, you will see very clearly in the margin, beside desolate, it can be read, and it probably should be based on the evidence. It's not the desolate, but is poured out on the desolator. The one who has done the destructive work is eventually themselves destroyed. We'll see that a little bit later. So these are the two parts, I believe, of verse 26 and 27. The purple is describing what's happening during the last week of the 70-week prophecy. The red is describing the aftermath or the wrap-up, what comes after the 70 weeks. Now, let's just strengthen our connection between the first half of these two final verses, the purple bits. Now, before we even put it on the screen, what is clearly the connection? Can you see it? I mean, I've bolded it, but what am I bolding? And what am I trying to highlight? What do we think? You might have to yell a little bit. Pardon? In the purple bit? Yep. True, the old system is going to end? Yes? Good? What about the bolded words? What's the connection between cut off and covenant? Anyone know? It is. In fact, brothers and sisters, the connection is so strong between these two purple bits, the two first halves of these verses, it is basically the same word, almost. The word cut off there in verse 26 is the word to make a covenant. It's exactly the same word. Haggai uses exactly that word in Haggai chapter 2, verse 5, when God recounts his relationship to the people coming out of Egypt, and he says, I covenanted with you. Exactly the same word as cut off. So this is what we're saying. Here's what's happening during the first week. During the first week, the Messiah is cut off because what's happening in his crucifixion is the formation of a covenant. That's what God is doing with his people. This is the creation of the new covenant through the death and resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ. And this is what Daniel is being told 500 years before it happened. That this Daniel is ultimately going to be the answer to the Mosaic system and your desperate prayer. The Hebrew for cut off is the idea of making a covenant. And look what it says. The detail that's added in verse 27 of the same 1 week says that he will confirm, and the Hebrew there is strengthen, a covenant with many for 1 week. So if anything comes out of this little a part of our session this morning, what's happening in the 1 week is the covenant is being strengthened. The new covenant. And it happens that at the core of that covenant is a Messiah who is cut off. And that's how the covenant comes into force. And we know that's exactly what happened with Christ. In the middle of the week, he will bring an end to sacrifice and offering. Now, how did he bring an end to sacrifice and offering in the middle of the week? Well, by his own sacrifice. Hebrews says this happened once for all, and by that, brothers and sisters, there is no longer ever any need for any more sacrifices of bulls or goats. It's done. The final sacrifice and the ultimate sacrifice has been made. And Christ's being cut off, the Messiah being cut off, Daniel is being told by Gabriel, will be the very means by which this covenant is absolutely strengthened. Now, when we come to Daniel chapter 9, verses 26 and 27, that's what's happening during the week. The covenant is the focus, as you can see. But what about the second part? This is the red text, or the second half of verse 26 and the second half of verse 27. Well, this part talks about the desolation that will follow the new covenant. And the desolation will be on the old system and the Jewish people themselves that are holding on to that system. Look what it says in verse 26, describing this destruction that will come after the 70 weeks has been strengthened and confirmed. The last week in particular, the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy this city and the sanctuary, and the end of it shall be with a flood till the end of the war desolations are determined. Now, the parallel to this is in verse 27b that says, and on the wing, or some will have in the margin, the overspreading of abominations. It's almost like the wings of a bird that just swoop down and overspread, and it brings abominations. It destroys the temple. It defiles the holy and the most holy place. Shall be one who makes desolate until the consummation, which is determined, is poured out on the desolator. By the way, as we read through this, you'll probably hear echoes of what we're told in Daniel chapter 8. Now, what's the connection between how it describes the destruction as being a flood in verse 26b, and then in 27 it describes it as if like there's this overshadowing wing that comes and destroys? What's the imagery that's being used in this sense for destruction? What's a flood describing? And what is an overshadowing wing describing? Well, in Isaiah chapter 8, these two bits of imagery come together in pretty much one verse. And it gives us the clue. Come to Isaiah chapter 8. This is military invasion language. Isaiah chapter 8 uses both of these types of imagery to describe the Assyrian invasion. So Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 6 for context, inasmuch as these people refuse the waters of Shiloh that flow softly and rejoice in Rezin and in Remaliah's son, now therefore behold, the Lord brings up over them the waters of the flood, the river, strong and mighty. The king of Assyria and all his glory will go up or overspill up over all his channels and go over all his banks and will pass through Judah and will overflow and pass over and reach up to his neck, and the stretching out of his wings will fill the breadth of your land, O Emmanuel. And brothers and sisters, this happens precisely again in AD 70. This is a description of the obliteration brought on by the Roman army in AD 70, which happens after the 70-week prophecy has been fully confirmed. Nothing's left to be done but to remove the remnants of the old system. By the way, this is exactly the time period that the letter of Hebrews is written in. The 70 weeks prophecy has been done in, as far as the 70 weeks go when Hebrews is written, but people are still holding on to the temple, and some people in Hebrews are turning back. And Hebrews is at pains, brothers and sisters, to say, no, you've missed the whole essence of the 70 week prophecy. The new covenant is in full force already. Do not go back to the law of Moses. It cannot save. And it actually says in Hebrews, can't remember the verse, it's just my head at the moment, but it says these things are basically passing out. They're on their way out, and they will be shortly, within 20 or 30 years. AD 70 would bring the desolation of that temple system. So this is the structure of verse 26 and 27. Those two verses describe the same thing twice over. What happens with the covenant during the week and what happens after. Now, let's just go back to during the 1 week then. The purple text, the first part of the two verses. And let's look at a few of the phrases there, just how powerful they truly were for us to see what was told to Daniel by Gabriel. We ask the question, when was Messiah cut off? Like, what is the date that we would be able to give to the death of Jesus Christ? And scholars agree. Again, I've put Wikipedia on there, not because it's like amazing, but because it gives like this interesting consensus source. And it's true. When you look, it's the definitely the consensus date for the death of Christ is AD 30. Oh, that's an incredible thing just to know. Because as we saw the 70-week timer started ticking in 5 a.m. I've got too many dates in my head. What's the date? This is, I should have just been asking this. What's the date of the start? 586. Thanks. 586 it started. And 49 years plus 434 plus 3.5 brings you exactly to AD 30 when Messiah was cut off in the middle of the week. And that was cutting the covenant and establishing it for you and for I. And we sit here this morning as the ones who are in that new covenant that Daniel was told with such precision, and God was in such control of the timing of that, because this, brothers and sisters, is after all God's plan for redemption from the very beginning. This is the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, and it's there in Daniel 9, verse 26 and 27. This is God's plan of redemption. And there it is in Daniel's 70-week prophecy. Do you know, the interesting thing and the beautiful thing, brothers and sisters, is look what it says about the cutting off of the Messiah in verse 26. Did you notice it says in verse 26, after the 62 weeks, so obviously in the final week, Messiah will be cut off. And it says, but not for himself. Now, this is also a pretty, if you look at different translations, not all translations actually say that. In fact, the King James and the New King James, who translate it not for himself, are on a little bit of shaky ground translating it that way. Let me explain what's going on here. The King James and New King James say cut off, but not for himself. But the literal Hebrew is a slightly, and I'm going to say, intentionally ambiguous phrase. In other words, God's designed it to have two concurrent meanings, and it's rich in meaning. The literal is, he is cut off and nothing for him. Now, what does that mean? Well, there's actual kind of different ways you can read this based on the grammar and the context. So if we took it strictly grammatically, right, which is dangerous to do without ignoring the context, but if we took it strictly grammatically, it literally says he's left with nothing. This describes a Messiah who, when he's cut off, is abandoned. He's stripped of everything. This is describing the forsaken Messiah. That's the literal hardcore grammar of the Hebrew. But in the context, and this is why the translators have sometimes modified that, and not without good reason, using the Hebrew as well, and not without some justification, you could read it as he was cut off, but not for himself. And this describes a selfless Messiah. This is beautiful, brothers and sisters, because right in the heart of the detail of the 70-week prophecy captures exactly in this beautiful Hebrew who our Messiah truly is and what he was about. He was selfless and he was forsaken. Come to Isaiah 53. This is just the message that is so powerfully portrayed in Isaiah 53. Forsaken and selfless in the establishment of the covenant by being cut off. Look what it says in Isaiah 53, verse 8. He was taken from prison and from judgment, and who will declare his generation? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgressions of my people, he was stricken. And both elements, brothers and sisters, we know are in there. This is a forsaken Messiah, but it's also selfless because everything he does is for others. A beautiful picture. So, brothers and sisters, what we can see is the establishment of the new covenant in the 70-week prophecy right in the middle of the week. But it does say that he will strengthen the covenant for 1 week. Now, we read that and we take that as from Jesus' baptism to another end point. So 7 years on from Jesus' baptism, that's described in Daniel 9 as strengthening the covenant. In the middle is when the covenant is actually made through the cutting off of the Messiah. So in the lead up for 3.5 years from Jesus' baptism, Jesus preaches in the streets of Galilee and introduces the new covenant. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. And he applies all these beautiful passages from Isaiah and other places to describe his mission in bringing about the true righteousness of God to the people right in their midst. And so when he teaches that, it culminates in the actual cutting of the covenant. And then, brothers and sisters, I believe this is right in the prophecy, for 3.5 years more, that covenant is fully strengthened as the disciples and the apostles take that new covenant and start to put it out. And I believe, brothers and sisters, the final culminating confirmation of the covenant, the final strengthening, comes at probably one of the most dramatic moments, other than the crucifixion and the resurrection, that's described in the New Testament. And it's the death of Stephen. But not just the death of Stephen. It's what Stephen said, it's what he prayed, and it's what he saw. And it's who he's talking to. So, this brings us to Acts chapter 7. And this, brothers and sisters, is absolutely incredible. And most people agree Stephen was killed in AD 33. So you've put that with the timing of Pentecost and a few other things of the gospel going out. It's basically 3.5 years after Jesus was put to death. And here we find in Acts chapter 7 the most compelling and the most strong speech in the entire book of Acts. And this will be an absolutely pivotal moment for the gospel and the new covenant. So we know what Stephen does in his speech, but I just want us to be aware of a couple things. We'll just take that off the screen for a second. What do we know about Stephen, first of all, from chapter 6? Character or descriptions? So Stephen's kind of introduced to us in chapter 6. What do we know about him? Man full of faith. And what else is he full of? Yeah, he was a Hellenistic Jew, wasn't he? You can tell by his name partly, but yeah, Stephen. So that's interesting. He's kind of Jewy, kind of Greeky. I don't know if that's the right word, but probably not. But what else do you know? He's full of faith and full of, someone did say it, the Holy Spirit. We're actually told that 3 times. Twice in chapter 6, once he was full of the Holy Spirit, then it says he was full of faith and power, and then at the end of chapter 7, he's full of the Holy Spirit. There's something going on with Stephen that's extraordinarily special in the presence of the Jews. Now, what else do we know was unique about Stephen as he launches into his speech in chapter 7? Yes! Look it! At the end of chapter 6, Stephen has a face, in verse 15, as the face of an angel. And we can only think that that must have some semblance of glory and glow about it, right? A glory that's there. Don't you think it's significant, brothers and sisters, that at the end of the 70 weeks, as Stephen is about to deliver the seminal speech telling the Jews they do not need the temple anymore, that's the thrust of his speech, that his face is shining like an angel, and Daniel, in Daniel chapter 9, verse 17, his prayer was, God, make your face to shine upon the sanctuary. And here we are, at the end of 490 years, Stephen stands up with his face like an angel, and says, the God of glory does not dwell in temples made with hands, because there's a new covenant in force. It's absolutely staggering. And it gets better, brothers and sisters. It's extraordinary. Think of what, and how important Stephen is for the strengthening and the final strengthening at the end of this last week of the covenant. He makes the most compelling speech to the Jews, convincing them, or not, of the fact that the temple is being decommissioned in that sense. And what does Stephen see, brothers and sisters? This is probably the most important thing for us to realize. He is the very first to see the fully glorified Jesus Christ with all power and authority standing on the right hand of God. He's the first to see it. This is now Messiah, the Prince. Do you remember that 70-week prophecy? From the going forth of the command to Messiah, the Prince, right? Or Messiah will be basically 70 weeks, the 62 weeks, and then the final week is the Messiah shows up. And now he is confirmed as the Prince. He's got all power and authority. Look at Acts chapter 7, verse 54. He's just told the people Messiah, or God does not need a temple. He dwells in heaven. Verse 54, when they heard these things, they were cut to the heart and they gnashed him with their teeth. But he, being full of the Holy Spirit, gazed up into heaven and saw the glory of God. It's almost like he's seen a picture of the most holy place, but not the physical temple version, the real one. And Jesus standing at the right hand of God. And he says, look, I see the heavens opened and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God. Do you know, brothers and sisters, this is the only time that someone other than Jesus uses the description, the Son of Man. And do you know, it's the last time it ever shows up in the New Testament, because he is now glorified with all power and authority. And do you know, that phrase comes straight from Daniel. It's amazing, brothers and sisters. This is what all of history has been waiting for. This is Genesis 3:15, now fully fulfilled. And obviously Jesus has more work to do to accomplish in the coming of his kingdom and the abolishment of mortality. Of course that. But the real nub of the problem is defeated. Sin has been conquered. And Jesus is standing at the right hand of God. This is now the Messiah, the Prince. And don't you see that this is the fifth and sixth outcome of the 70-week prophecy? He has now been sealed up, the vision sealed up, and the prophet sealed. This is what we're seeing in Stephen's vision. And also the most holy has been anointed. He's been confirmed. This is God's Son, the Son of Man, with all power and authority. And just as Gabriel said would happen, this has come together in the most precise way. Another beautiful thing to think about, brothers and sisters, is this. That Stephen's prayer, well, let's read it in Acts chapter 6. He knelt down and cried out with a loud voice, Lord, do not charge them with this sin. And when he had said this, he fell asleep. Stephen speaks, and we cannot miss it, directly to the risen Lord Jesus Christ in the vision that he saw him. And he asks Jesus to be forgiving of these people that are stoning him in the very action. Now this confirms to us, brothers and sisters, that this is the final strengthening, the solidifying, the complete confirmation of the covenant. Jesus is in the position that God prophesied he would be in as the high priest of the new covenant. Not with bulls and goats' blood, but with the blood of his own. It's powerful, brothers and sisters. And do you know what this does? Is link together three faithful brethren who were desperate for the salvation of the natural people Israel and could only look forward to, and as Stephen does, literally, the salvation of the covenant going to much more. Both, or all three, Ezra, the start of the 70-week prophecy, Daniel, the one who heard it would come, and Stephen, the end. All of their prayers link the same themes, and even Stephen's speech is part of that. The sins and the transgressions of Israel, relating to the temple and the sanctuary, the sacrifices and offerings, this is all in Stephen's speech. Pleas for mercy and forgiveness. So Stephen's speech and his prayer explains the answer to Daniel and Ezra. It's beautiful, brothers and sisters. Well, how significant. Little did his accusers know what they were saying in verse 13 of chapter 6. This man does not cease to speak blasphemous words against this holy place and the law. For we've heard him say that Jesus of Nazareth is going to destroy this place and change the customs which Moses delivered to us. And they could not know how true those words were. And that brings us to the second part of verse 26 and 27. The covenant is in full force, brothers and sisters. And what happens next is a traumatic desolation of the city of Jerusalem and the sanctuary, what was foretold in Daniel chapter 9. You know, we're told in Daniel chapter 9, can you just flick back to Daniel chapter 9? Look what it says. The second part of, verse 26. So after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And we've looked at that. But look what it says. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, the end of it shall be with a flood. Now, what is that talking about, brothers and sisters? Well, the people of the prince is unmistakable. Or the prince. Let's just identify the prince first. Who is the prince? It's unmistakable in Daniel. We're already told. Look at verse 25. The prince is Messiah. Right? Now, Messiah is first cut off, and then he becomes the prince in that sense, in the fullest sense that Stephen saw him. Stephen sees him with his full aspect of Messiah the prince. But the prince here must be Jesus. This is the word, Nagid, for ruler or commander. It's used of the kings of Israel in Samuel, both of those. The only time it's used in Messiah is definitely a reference, in Isaiah, is definitely a reference to the Messiah. This is Messiah. It's all through Ezekiel too, in the vision of Ezekiel's temple prophecy. The prince is Messiah, there's no doubt about it. So this is Jesus. So who are his people? The only answer is the Roman armies. And because he's the prince, brothers and sisters, he is in full control of the Roman armies. And just like he said to Pilate, and this was an ominous warning almost, you have no authority unless it's given to you. And now what Daniel pictures, or Gabriel gives to Daniel to picture, is that there will come a time when this army will obliterate the city and the sanctuary, and it's headed by Messiah himself to mete out the judgment on this people that's long been filled up, as Daniel 8 also talks about. Now, if we wonder if that's true, I want you to come to Matthew 22. Matthew 22 is the parable of the wedding feast. where a king invites people to a wedding. Verse 2, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son and sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. And he sent them out to the servants, so I've prepared all these things. But verse 5, they made light of it and went their ways, one to his own farm, another to his business. And the rest, they seized his servants and treated them spitefully and killed them. And we know who this is talking about, brothers and sisters. Jesus is speaking to them in verse 1, the scribes and Pharisees. What's the response of the king who made the invitation? When the king, verse 7, heard about it, he was furious. And he sent out his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. That's a description of AD 70. It's exactly what Daniel's 70-week prophecy described would happen after the establishment of the covenant in the last week. And if we're still at wondering whether Jesus would be in command of this army, Matthew's gospel ends with telling us, or we're told at the end of the Gospels, that Jesus has been given all power and authority. These are his armies on behalf of his father, the king. And Rome would be used to destroy Jerusalem. Which is amazing to me, brothers and sisters, just as a little side point, isn't it? Because when, and we love the book of Revelation, when John gets the book of Revelation, And it talks about the power of Rome and the Roman apostasy. Through all of the horrible tragedies that Rome and the Roman Catholic system, whether pagan or Catholic system, Christianized Rome, whatever happens over the next 2,000 years, John already knows one thing. When Revelation comes about, he already knows that Jesus has far more power than Rome does. In fact, he controlled it in AD 70. So John already knows that when he gets Revelation. And anything that's said about Rome, all the tragedies that Rome will bring, all the persecution and the martyrdom of the saints and the blood and the fornication, John already knows that Jesus is stronger than Rome. It's beautiful. And we know that too. So in the 70-week prophecy, brothers and sisters, we are told that Messiah is cut off in the middle of the week. But he becomes Messiah the Prince at the end. And if you notice, just a little tweak in the 70-week prophecy, when it describes him bringing the Roman armies against Jerusalem, he's just described as the Prince, the people of the Prince, because they rejected him as their Messiah. And for the Roman people, he's certainly not their Messiah, right? They did not accept him as such. So he is just the prince, the one who has complete command and control. And it's the prince who brings that army against the city. And we know about this from so many descriptions and how horrific it was and how true those descriptions are in Daniel's 70-week prophecy, that the end of it will be with a flood. And on the wing of abomination shall be one who makes desolate. This is the same power as Daniel 8. The fierce countenance. And we're told through this process, he will bring an end to sacrifice and offering in two ways. One through his own crucifixion and resurrection. And also one literally when that system is obliterated. So brothers and sisters, I want you to think about two things. Daniel prayed, O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. Oh Lord, listen and act. And he has, brothers and sisters, with salvation and everlasting righteousness. And it's the purpose of our next two classes to just focus on the amazing nature of what we have in that. And we're just going to fill our time trying to absorb how the Apostle Paul understood what that meant as a result of what God has brought in. Daniel prayed, O Lord, do not delay. And he didn't, brothers and sisters. Everything was precisely timed over 490 years. and the new covenant is in force.